It's Tuesday, the 12th of April, and it's time to get your grin on with the Grincast, here to discuss the world of gaming from the past week. Kind of. I'm your host, Ace, and joining me are Arturo.
Hello, everyone.
Gozagoz.
Hello.
And Prince.
Hello.
I say kinda because I decided most of the news is downer stuff, and I'm really not in the mood for negative news, so I figured, why not just have a chat. You can get to know the podcasting crew, and we can get to rant about whatever we want to rant about. But as we start every episode, what have you been playing, Arturo?
Crystal Greed. Still, somehow. I'm not used to JRPGs. So I usually every game I play will last me around. I take a while longer to play games. It admittedly speaking, I read. I don't read slow, but I do read it out loud for my wife. So I read slow. I'm walking around. I'm like, oh wow, look at that. Oh wow, look at this. And if you give me two side quests, I'll do them both at the same time somehow by jumping between the two areas because I just don't tend to focus a lot. So when I was offered a JRPG. And I haven't actually finished one ever in my whole life. I was like, I think 40 hours in, and I think I'm somehow halfway into the game, and it's driving me nuts. It's so crazy how long it is. And since I usually take it overboard, I think, you know, checking the Steam reviews and seeing how long it takes them to finish the game, I'm already above average. And I'm like, how? I'm only halfway into the level cap. But it's been really fun because there's just so much to do and so much to unlock. It really is a great way to fuse a bunch of genres. I'm kind of scared that I jumped into the wrong JRPG and now everything's going to be suboptimal in comparison to two. But, you know, I guess from here on we just play Final Fantasy for another 200 hours.
You know, that I love that you're loving, like, because I know you don't tend to care for games like that, if I'm correct, yeah?
Yeah, no, I've never really tried them.
Yeah, so it makes me really happy to hear that, like, you're having fun.
Yeah, it's so fun. It has, like, this... I'm not sure if any of you guys has played CrossCode, but CrossCode kind of tried to fuse a couple of genres, and it did it wonderfully, and I really liked it. But this one, it feels like it's just basically grabbed every genre. Unfortunately, it does feel like it's kind of missing on the storyline. So every once in a while, when the enemies start getting kind of annoying to fight, like they'll all counter. So I have to be really careful not to attack or do this, especially because I'm playing in hard mode, naturally, as I tend to do. And it's just so annoying because then I'm just stuck and I'm like, I don't want to continue because the enemies in this area are really annoying, but I know I like the game, but I don't care because the story is not that great anyway, so it's not really hooking me. So yesterday I was struggling a lot to continue playing for a while.
I can understand that problem, to be honest. Sometimes you just get taken out of it and it's hard to get back in.
Yeah, it's really difficult, especially with games so long. Like, I haven't even finished Elden Ring. I'm almost 100. I'm basically 100 hours into the game, and I haven't finished it. And you know, people are finishing it over there in 9 minutes. So I'm like, okay, there's something wrong with me. But aside from that, I don't think I've ever actually finished an open world aside from Fallout 4, and that's just because I've spent oh gosh, I don't even want to tell you guys the number. Wait, I've spent 225 hours in Fallout. But it wasn't even me playing like one save file. It's just me playing until like 20 hours, 30 hours, 40 hours, and then forgetting the game exists. And then coming back and doing that for like 5 or 6 save files until I was like, no, I'm going to finish it. I have to. Like, at this point, I'm freaking slow as all hell.
Yeah. You know, you'll get there someday, though. Like, that's the fun thing, to be honest, is I personally love when a game takes forever. I think of that, like, if a game is able to actually keep me the whole time and it takes me like 200 hours or more, that means it's a good game.
I agree. I really love long games, and I just really like seeing that I've spent like hundreds of hours on one game, because, you know, I just love playing video games for like 50 hours on end. So it's really sad that the really long titles I can't play because I just end up doing something else. So I've decided I'm finishing Crystal Project no matter what.
Hey. I can't wait for when you finish it. You're going to be so happy.
Goes, what about you?
I played a bunch of stuff. Predator, Hunting Grounds, and Red Dead Online, and Babylon's Fall. I don't know. What do you want me to elaborate on?
Are there any funny stories from playing Predator with the Game Grin community via the Game Grin Discord?
Funny. Did something funny happen? I don't know. We were all playing for the first time and we were learning the game. We were basically failing. I can't think of anything specific. But I actually, like, when the game came out, I didn't hear much about it. I heard some people say that it's bad, but I think it's actually pretty good, especially for the price that I paid. Like, if you like The Predator, the first film, then it's basically that experience. It's not the same story, of course, because it's multiplayer, but it's, you go with a squad of you and three other people to do a mission and, like, kill drug lords and whatnot. And there's a predator also, another player who just is just here to hunt and have a nice time. And yeah, the fire team, the human team tries to complete their objectives, their mission, and extract. And the predators there to get trophies. So it's pretty well done, to be honest. It's everything is as I would expect. It complete with the predator feeling, playing as a predator feels like playing a predator, and playing the fire team feels like playing Arnold's. Like you take almost no damage from AI, human AI enemies, and basically you're an action hero. And yeah,
fair enough. I imagine some of the negative reviews at the time were because it was an Epic exclusive early in Epic Game Store's life, and it received barely any publicity. There was like no media coverage or anything because they weren't telling people about it.
I found that to be a common problem. There was like Crystal Project had basically no publicity. It basically had no publicity, so I had no idea it was coming out. And I believe there's been so many games that I'm like, wow, I had no idea this existed, but they're pretty big. I'm like, wow, that's really sad, actually. Especially because, I mean, I suck at publicity. I if I was trying to make a game out, I'm pretty sure it would just freaking fail on spot.
Yeah, I mean, last several years, a success of a video game is more dependent on the marketing than the video game itself. That's really sad for me. Because big publishers obviously can afford to spend millions on marketing and indies like nothing. So, of course, you know which title is gonna be a commercial success and which titles are gonna get nominated for awards. Because people will play those games and not those that weren't marketed.
The moral of the story is don't spend all of your money on the Predator license, save some for the marketing.
Yeah, legit though, if people would market their games better. I mean, it sucks for indie, obviously, but I mean, like, in that case, that's a way bigger developer right there. Like, that, if they flop because they didn't market, that's on them, and it's really sad for the indie market as well, though.
Well, Prince, what about you? What have you been playing?
Oh, no.
Sorry, you got me. You got me. fuck, it's Silent Hill 4 again, but I have a different game also. But I had to replay Silent Hill 4 again this week. I'm actually bummed out about it, because what I did was I forgot to take screenshots of the most important places for my stupid article I wrote. Like an idiot, so I had to replay the whole stupid game.
Oh no, that's happened to me so many times.
I was like, damn, I got so caught up in the game that I forgot to actually like do the work I was doing, which was unfortunate, but I finished. Thank God, we're all good on that. I'm probably, even though I love Silent Hill 4 and it has some of the most like unique things when it comes to the small details, I'm going to be putting it down for like at least a couple of months. I can't do it right now, not playing it twice in a row. I hate doing that. Like it's right after, like playing a game right after you played a game just kind of like is not it for me. I usually need to wait a little bit of time, so I don't know, I'm burnt out on it now, which sucks.
Yeah, I can't understand how people can play a game, finish it, and then go straight into New Game Plus without
without a break. That's hard. Like I need at least a month of cooldown, so it's like what? But
I used to think the same, but I played Sekiro, finished it, and then played all the way to NG+7. And I also played Ori and the Blind Forest 8 times back to back, not including every time I died on my one life run.
Dang, I wish I could do that. I think the only time I ever actually tried to do like a New Game Plus immediately after was Persona 5 Vanilla, actually. And I did it, actually, but I've not played that game in the 2 years since I have done it. And immediately I have like 400 hours at least on that game, so that is part of why. But like I've not touched it since. But the other game, actually, that leads into it. The other game I played this week, thank God, finally, was I had a power outage, so it's on my phone. And the magic we could do with phones is so nice because I played Persona 3 Portable. which was
no way. There was a change,
huh?
You finally changed from.
I mean, it's. I wouldn't call it a change. Like Persona is definitely in my revolving. I have like a games that just switch in and out. It is a little shocking because it's not a horror game, and it's been a hot fucking minute since I haven't been playing horror games. I'm not gonna lie. I went through some stuff. Which for some reason led me into horror, like as the coping mechanism. But before that, it was mainly like JRPG fantasy games. It's nice. I'm getting back to normal. I'm back on Persona 3. I love Persona 3 because you get to be Femcy, who is MC's female counterpart, obviously. You get to choose your gender in this game. But it actually is it's more than just a gender choice because the characters are genuinely different, like, because that is how real life works, you know? It's interesting, you know, that the MC, like, his personality is so different than the Femcy because they're not gonna have lived the same lives because one's a dude and one's a chick and you're gonna have different things. And she's a really cool character because, like, she actually has a bit of a personality because this is during the time where Atlus was like, what if we gave our silent protagonist personalities anyways? Which in Japan, they hated that, but it was decently received in the US. So, you know, I like it. So you see Femcy and you, Narukami, who actually has a name.
I love the fact that it's called Femcy, though, like the pun.
Yeah, I don't think they actually give her a name outside of player, but that is what like the community has adopted because we were already calling like MC is main character. And that's just a common thing you see in a lot of things, like a lot of dating sims carry on with that. Like MC has always just been like a thing, main character. So to have Femcy because she's literally just like she's female main character. It's nice though, but she's a great representation actually of female depression, which I find so interesting. Like the way they do her is so good. Like she has a personality and it blows my mind, to be honest. Like they put more work into her story, which I think is to make up for the fact that Portable is less of a game than Persona 3 and Persona 3 FES. Cause those are on PS2 and they just had way more capability. So to make up for it, they ended up creating a whole new character and a whole new, like, story. The world is slightly different depending on the actions you make. And the color schemes are mainly, like, pinks instead of, like, the blues, which I find... I'm like, God, why would you do this? Ah, but I'm also like, it does look nice. And the music is different, too. The whole soundtrack is different. And I love that. Because she would she listens to different music than the other guy. It's great.
Oh, my gosh, that's awesome.
Yeah, like, so they redid the whole soundtrack, like, to match her and who she's listening to. Because that's the thing. That's the headphones both main characters wear are, like, that is the music in the game. Like, it is coming through the character's headphones. Like, not literally, but, like, it is, it's heavily implied that that's what's actually going on when there's the soundtrack in the different areas.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so it's so, like, it's the nicest thing. They change, like, everything to match with her when you play her route. Like, different music, different color schemes, different people interact with her differently. You can, obviously, actually, an interesting tidbit about her is that she is bisexual, whereas MC is not. He's straight. Like, it's weird. Like, she's a whole different character who has a whole different life in these different things, and I find it so interesting.
I love that they did that.
Does her persona have different hair?
Yes, her persona is actually, like, different too. It's a different Orpheus, which is so interesting to me. Like, they even changed the design of her persona. Like, it's the same, it's still Orpheus, but it looks like her instead, which really drives in the fact that Orpheus looks like the main character. Like, that's on purpose. It's always been on purpose. But it really drives that in, especially when Orpheus changes to, I believe it's Orpheus Telos. That is, it looks like Aegis instead, but I'm not 100 on the name there.
Okay, well, myself, I didn't play very much this week. I played a bit more Guardians of the Galaxy, and I kind of saw the plot beat that I've just experienced coming, but I mean, it was pretty well telegraphed. If you're a Marvel fan, there's a lot of good Easter eggs in there for Marvel fans. There's a bar on Nowhere called Mantlo's Bar, named after Bill Mantlo, a writer for Marvel Comics for some years.
Wow, that's a nice little detail there. I also love that you're the, like, of course you're finding this stuff. You'd notice.
Well, the Star-Lord has a scanner built into his helmet, so you can scan various things and, like, all the storefronts in Nowhere to have alien writing, but your scanner translates it. So I'm scanning around and Mantlo's Bar. Ah, that's good. a non-spoiler is I'm on my way to see Cosmo, the security guard of Nowhere. He's in the comics and I believe the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. He's the Russian dog that was sent up into space to see if it was safe.
Oh my gosh.
And he has psychic powers. And it's, Star-Lord says something like, I get on well with him. And it's implied because they're from the same planet.
I love the fact that they're putting some... It seems like it's such a love letter to Marvel fans.
Yeah, it really is. Marvel's Avengers, it had its lore, but it wasn't anywhere as deep as this.
I would love to be able to play that one. I'm still waiting to be able to get it on Steam, because honestly, I have no doubt in my mind I'm going to love Guardians of the Galaxy, so I'm like, I might as well just wait until I can get the hours on Steam.
Oh my god, sounds... you and Steam hours cracked me up so much. Holy shit.
You see, before my Steam library grew to having like 500 games, my goal was to have every game on my Steam library to have 100 hours.
That is insane. I can't even relate. I'm sorry. But also, Ace, you have been, like, steadily selling this game for me, to be honest. Like, I think I actually might... This is funny. Like, even in marketing, I just dead-ass didn't really want this game, which is funny. Like, but like the more you talk about it, the more I'm like, oh no. And now that I know it has all these small details, because like shit like that makes me love a game. I like shit like that so much.
Yeah, it's so nice when they clearly put so much love. It makes the game feel so full.
It does. Oh my gosh, it totally does. So it just, like, you're selling this game for me, Ace.
I'll admit, when it before it came out, when they were in the early marketing stages, so someone involved with the game, like a designer, director or something, said that this is a brand new interpretation of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, and they told us that too.
And I looked at the character designs and no.
That's what I thought. Literally, while I was in there after like watching, like I did, because you know they always have us ask questions. It's how marketing product testing goes. That's just how it is. At the end of the meeting, but I was like what do you mean this is new? Like and they were just so happy they changed Star-Lord's hair, I think it was, at the time. Like that's just what they kept talking about to us. I did not care. I was like, this is the same shit it always is. But I think they're trying not to connect to the movies.
There's like nothing wrong with connecting to the movie interpretations, which they clearly are. Because Drax is an alien, like he is in the movies. He is not in the comics. And Star-Lord now likes 80s music instead of 70s music.
Oof. Oh no, and we can never forgive them for this.
Honestly, literally, though, 70s music is so much better. I'm gonna be real with you.
But yes, so when they said that, I was like, no, I'm against the game because you are trying to tell me that it's a brand new interpretation when it's clearly not. But having played the game, I can fully recommend it as a comics fan, and yeah, I enjoyed the movies as well. They're fun, funny sci-fi movies, and that's totally my bag.
Well, that's nice. You know what? Now I gotta buy a game, so thanks a lot. But like, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, that takes us into our main topic for today. What has been your favorite game you've played this year? Released this year? Outside of this year? Anytime?
Anytime this? Like, what do you mean?
Like, so you've played it
like three times.
You've played it this year, but it can be released absolutely anywhere. Anywhere, anytime, I mean.
First time this year, then, yes?
Yeah.
Okay. I gotta think.
What about you, Ace?
Game I've been sinking quite a bit of time into recently, I've spoken about it in the past, Hard Space Shipbreaker. You're out in space orbiting the planet and you have to disassemble ships to repay your debt to the company you are disassembling ships for. And if you like cut the wrong bit without powering it down, or because it's an exploding barrel or something like that, and it disintegrates you. You are cloned, which adds to your debt.
How do you even do to know where not to hit the ship? Like, I see this, and I'm more confused than I'm looking at a car. And let me tell you, I'm already really confused then.
You do have a scanner. It tells you what's safe and what's not. Once you've upgraded a bit. But there's barrels of fuel that are clearly labeled as, like, do not cut this with your laser torch. But I actually stopped playing it because I finished the part of the story that because it's in early access, so I finished up to the part of the story they'd completed, and then I noticed a news post that they posted in January that I completely missed, saying we're close to the full release in like spring or something, and it'll cause a progression reset. I'm looking forward to playing it, but I'm not going to play it until this progress reset has been done.
That's one of the reasons why I avoid early access games so much. I really like them. I really like supporting early access developers, though, to be fair, I've been duped multiple times now. But that's besides the point. It really sucks when you're really into a game and it's like, haha, see you later, and then full release. I'm like, no, don't do this to me right now.
Yeah, we've changed where the saves go, or the game has changed significantly since your last save, so it's not compatible.
Yeah, it's horrible. All right.
I don't blame them for it, but as I say, I'm not playing it again until the update.
No, it's a very fair standing, honestly. And plus, it's not very far away if it's spring. Correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm kind of lost always in seasons, but it should be in these next couple of months, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I'm really excited for its full release, honestly. It looks pretty interesting. I'm not sure how much it might be for me, but you're really good at selling games. So ever since the first time you told me, you just continue being cloned. Every time you're a failure, I'm like, yes, that's what I want.
I've got over 63 hours in the game, and I usually have it on while I usually play it while I'm watching something on the other screen, and there's not really much else I can say about it.
Well, how about you, Gors? What's your favorite game of this year?
That's my least favorite question. Why are you doing this to me? it's bane of my existence. What's your favorite X?
Okay, you can choose a top couple of games. I understand the pain.
I mean, it's like I would need to examine what I played this year and stuff like that. Like I wonder, did I play any of the any old games this year yet? Because one of those will likely be that, but I don't think so.
Okay, you can choose the top three if you want. I understand. I always try to. I don't like choosing favorites either. When I was younger, people would be like, "What's your favorite color?" I'd be like, "Rainbow."
No, but I think the problem is, boys, like, have you played a new game this year yet?
Is that a new game?
Well, not a new game, but I mean, like that was the question. Like, a game we have played this year, but the game could be from any time. Like, a game, is that right? Am I thinking?
Yeah. No, you're right.
Okay, yeah, like your first time playing a game this year, but the game can be from wherever.
Does it have to be first time? It can't be a game that I played before.
Yeah, it can't be a game you've played before. That's why I'm struggling thinking, to be honest, at the moment.
I'm like, what's new? I was like thinking about all the games that I know and which ones did I play this year.
Yeah, that's why I try to choose first time, because it's easier to keep track of, because I've played quite a large amount of games, and you know, we're always going to revisit our favorite games basically every year. So it's always. Like, it's not fair to include those.
Mm-hmm.
If you like, I can get back to you and I can ask Prince in the meantime.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, Prince, what about you?
Talk to you tomorrow.
I'm thinking, to be honest, still, because I'm like, have I... Like, because obviously the year started on the 1st of January. And I'm like, have I, like, played a new game since then? Or have I been revolving through the games while like, I know I start, like, here's the thing. The two new, like, first-time games for me that I could think of that I really, really enjoyed, like, more than anything, I was like, how did I miss this? Were Space Channel 5 and DMC Devil May Cry, the reboot. But here's the thing. I'm almost sure I played those in, like, November for the first time. And I don't think I've played anything new since. I have played them. I'm not with either of them. But I'm like, because I don't think I've started an actual new game yet this year.
Chinese year.
Like, that's useful.
Chinese New Year start. Like, it's a hard question for me because I've been on a rotation, obviously. Anyone who listens to the podcast knows that.
Anyone that knows anything about you knows that.
Well, my favorite games are always going to be the ones I revisit, and I find a lot of comfort in games because, like, games are my friends.
I understand that, for the record.
Like, it's crazy. Like, I mean, now that I'm an adult, I have real friends. Like, I made so many friends in college. I was so shocked by how popular I was because I had never been, like, I'd never had friends before straight up. So it was really nice. So I do have a lot of friends and stuff now, which I'm super grateful for. But that just takes up my gaming time on top of it. So it's, like, even more easy to just not play new games and play old games that I know already. I've played tons of old games. I even revisited games from when I was a child, like, this year. This has been my year of revisiting. So I'm like, new things. All I can think of is Space Channel 5, which was amazing. Oh my god. Best. It's weird. It's, like, honestly the best rhythm game. It's weird that Michael Jackson is in it. I'm like, what the hell, every time?
Space Channel 5? I've never heard of that one.
You've never heard of Space Channel 5?
Nope.
Oh my god. Oh my god. I love Space Channel 5. So it came out for the Dreamcast, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure. Yes. Yeah. It was Sega's kind of attempt at a girl game, quote unquote.
okay.
Like, I'm not kidding. So they ended up making this bitchin' ass news reporter who dances all the time, Ulala. Like, it's so cool. And then she saves the world, like, through dance. She gets to save the world. And you have all these characters, and there's so much dancing. And it's like a real rhythm game. It's genuinely, like, you think it'd be easy because it's kind of like you repeat what's been told to you type of rhythm game. Except for that's way harder than you realize when you're playing it, especially when it's like a minute worth of, like, left, right, up, down, right. And then the rhythm will change, like, right, left at the end, you know?
Oh no. Yeah, I've been looking at the Steam reviews. People are like, the Dark Souls of rhythm games.
Literally, it literally is. Oh my god. On Steam, I believe, do they only have Space Channel Part 2?
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, that's funny because the first one's actually way harder than the second one.
There's also a VR version.
Yes, there is. I want to play it so bad. It's like the whole reason I kind of want to give VR, to be honest. Is generally, once I found out there was a third one, I was like, well, now I need to get VR because, like, they're so fun. I'm on the second one right now. They really are just great rhythm games. The music is fantastic. It's bossa nova. I love me some bossa nova. Oh my god. There's, like, full 60s theme. It's just nice. It's got, like, honestly, it gets, like, it's got big Austin Powers vibes, which is like that fake British 60s that I don't think really happened, but I'm not 100 because I've only ever seen it in Austin Powers. it's got those vibes, and then no one's British, which is nice. No offense. I mean, it's not nice, but it's nice for me because accents distract me real bad, and I can't deal with an accent when I'm already dealing with, like, left, right, up, down, right, you know?
That's hilarious, the absent, like, accents distracting you.
If they were British the whole time, I'd be fucked. I would be absolutely fucked. No offense, once again. I'm really sorry, Ace. I don't, like, mean it in a negative way. I just mean it in, like, to be honest, I pay attention to, like, I'm really bad at paying attention. I have ADHD. That's just how it is, how I am. I've always paid attention in, like, meetings and stuff like that when it comes to, like, Game Grin, because everyone is British or, like, some other variant of European, and I pay so much attention to all the accents, and I find them so interesting and, like, intricate.
I understand, because it happens to me too. I'm so used to not even hearing much English at all, aside from media, because, well, when I go out and I talk to people, they're just talking to me in Spanish, and whenever they do realize I'm talking English with my wife, they have, like, the really horrible accent, and they're like, oh, do you speak English? And I'm like, well, yes, but unlike you. Okay, it's a joke, obviously, but I'm used to everyone speaking the, like, bad English or just Americans. So when I joined Game Grin, they were like, oh, we're British. That I'm like, uh-oh, I'm not very good at understanding British English.
Oh, to be honest, when I applied, I also did not even realize that Game Grin was British, because I believe the listing I applied to online had it for some reason marked down as San Francisco. What? Yeah, I imagine it was like an issue on like, oh, where the hell did I find you guys at? Like Indeed or something. But
who's getting fired for this?
I don't even remember what site it was. Maybe it was LinkedIn. I don't remember which site it was. But I remember I found y'all guys when I was job searching right after I graduated college. And I just said, fuck it, you know, let's write for video games, you know? But it had y'all listed in like a totally different area. So I was so shocked when I like showed up and everyone was British.
I was really worried. I was like, oh no, I'm not going to understand people. I'm going to be like, sorry, what? Sorry, what?
It was such a shock, to be honest. Hey, Michael Jackson. So sorry. Mid-sentence had to cut off because I saw a GIF of Space Channel Michael Jackson.
I'm not editing that out.
That's great. That's even better. Oh, my gosh.
That's the title? Oh, Michael Jackson?
I'm editing out the explanation, but not the
emotion. just write that it's a nervous dick. Oh, Michael Jackson.
Like, that's, oh my god, that would be so funny. But it's fun. In Space Channel 5, actually, he's in the first one a little bit because he had actually, for some reason, he knew the creator of Space Channel 5. I don't know how that happened. But he got to, like, because he was working with Sega anyways at the time for, like, various music things, I believe, relating to the Sonic soundtrack? I'm not 100 on what Michael Jackson has done musically for like Sega, but he did do stuff. But they showed him basically Space Channel 5, like, hey, come look at this game that is coming out in like a month or two. Like, it was insane. And he was like, can I be in this? I'm so sorry for trying to do a voice there. I realized I should not after I started. I was like, it's too late now. But he asked if he could be in it. And so they rush put him in it in the first game for only a little bit. And then in the second game, he is so grateful for being saved in the first game that he is straight up working at Space Channel 5. Like, he works there now and is basically like your news cheerleader. And you find that out as Space Channel 5 is straight up being attacked and all these things are going crazy. And it gets so sad and dramatic, too. I was like, no! Oh. It's good.
What about you, Arthur? What's your favorite game?
Well, honestly, it's really, really... I thought it was going to be harder to choose because both Elden Ring and Ghostwire Tokyo have blown me away at how much I've loved the games. And honestly, I didn't really expect to love Ghostwire Tokyo. So when I walked into it and it was a really great game, I was like, wow, I love this. But... I think I have to give it to Elden Ring. It's the first game that is actually like open world that has kept me going for 84 hours with minimal resets. Because realistically speaking, 40 hours into my run, I was like, no, I want to try another class. So I still kind of failed, but at least I didn't abandon the game altogether. And it honestly, I was really, really excited for Elden Ring for, I think, a couple of months before its release. So I always try to kill hype for games, but it was really difficult for Elden Ring. Like, even at this point, God of War Ragnarok being God of War being my favorite game, I'm not excited for God of War Ragnarok because I feel like there's so much more that can be screwed up because it's, you know, it has narrative implementation. So they might screw up the story. I might not like how it ends. I might not like some of the characters. But I knew with Elden Ring, all it was going to be was gameplay. So I was just 100% convinced I was going to love it. And I was right. And for it to meet the expectations I had, it's quite shocking, really. I'm still playing it. And I'm pretty sure I'm just going to jump straight into New Game Plus as soon as I'm done with it. So I have to give it to that one, even if I... Like, even if I didn't want to, because when I really entered the game, when I was writing the review, I was like, no, I'm not gonna rate this game super, super highly. But as I wrote and wrote and wrote, I was like, no, I love this game. I love it. I love it.
That's so nice. Oh my gosh. Sorry, I love that, like, I love that you love games. I know it's stupid. I love when everyone loves games.
No, I understand the feeling. It's just really nice to see someone be so hype, happy about their games. It's like, I hate Ace's games. You know, I really don't like Saints Row, but he loves it so much. And I'm like, I'm so happy for you. I can't wait for the reboot to come out for you.
this is why I didn't want to talk about news, because it was all downer stuff, and I just wanted to have a happy podcast.
No, this is nice, honestly. I love this. Like, everyone's just talking about games they like, and it's so good, honestly. But also, I believe we have to come back to Gores.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to let Gors survive this.
I'm going to go. Goodbye.
Now that you've been caught, you're going to go, you mean?
So what was the question?
What's your favorite game that you've played for the first time this year, but it can be released any year? Like, it really could be the first Mario, and I take it because, like, I haven't played the first Mario.
Who did? I don't know. Probably Babylon's Fall.
Oh, really? Why?
Oh, I just really enjoyed it.
Hell yeah! That's what it's about.
Yeah, I really couldn't with the game, unfortunately. I was so sad when I tried it. But, like, sell me on it. I really want to like it.
I mean, I'm a big fan of platinum games, and, like, even the people who founded it, their previous works like Kamiya and Shinji Mikami. So I'm a fan of them from even before Platinum Games existed. So first off, I was excited to see that they are finally gonna release a game that's something different from what they usually do, which they wanted to do for a while. So first off, from that perspective, like a developer following another developer's work, I really like that from that perspective. And yeah, I think it's a really good game, actually, because it's, I mean, usually they do beat 'em up games, or hack and slash, someone calls them, which is beat 'em up with melee weapons, which is redundant, in my opinion. I just call them beat 'em ups.
Understandable.
Doesn't matter what weapons they use. The gameplay is still the same. And also, they have guns, so hack and slash and shoot. Hack and shoot, slash and shoot. How many names do you have to come up with to make it more and more specific?
That's shoot 'em up, right? Isn't that like a shoot 'em up game? Is what that is when it has guns, isn't it? Or no?
Isn't shoot 'em up though like a side scrolling thing or a Galaga type thing? Isn't that what you call a shoot 'em up?
We're just gonna have to agree to call it all kill 'em ups.
Yeah.
I mean, we could go way, way back to, like, where different genre names originate and what they meant then and what they mean now, but
we
whatever.
Can make that a whole episode. We should do that. We should, like, a whole challenge episode of the Grincast. Let's find out the origins of names.
I've been writing an article series on that, but there's just so much shit that they keep adding that it's never gonna be finished. Because, yeah, I keep finding out stuff from new stuff myself as I write to inform someone else. So it's, yeah,
that's literally how it is, though. Like, I think that's what makes it so hard when you have, like, when you're writing to inform other people, is that the pursuit of knowledge never ends and you're always going to learn more.
So here's a fun thing about genres in Babylon's Fall. So Babylon's Fall was marketed as a hack and slash.
Oh.
But a name hack and slash actually comes from a playstyle in tabletop RPGs, which is basically you go into a dungeon, you kill everything, you get the loot, you equip better equipment to go to a harder dungeon and kill more, basically kill loot. That's basically hack and slash in tabletops.
Yeah, and but that's dungeon crawling in video games, yeah?
I mean,
no. Okay, maybe I'm not.
I mean, I'm really confused about what dungeon crawling even is. Like, honestly,
I assumed it was the thing Gors just said, but apparently not. Sorry, Gors.
I mean, again, it's complicated, but yeah, the term hack and slash basically was used originally to describe when you have your Dungeons and Dragons campaign, but you don't have much character interaction. It's just about killing monsters and getting items and moving on and doing that over and over. Hack and slash. I think one of the first uses of the term was, I think one of the creators of D&D said that D&D doesn't have to just be hack and slash. You can have romance and other shit, and not just killing monsters. Basically, hack and slash, think Diablo and Diablo-type games.
Yeah.
Now I just call them Diablo-likes, because everyone knows Diablo. Sorry, I veered off into a subject about genres,
which is an endless
fucking subject.
Thought it was interesting. I feel like I both realized I'm not knowledgeable at all, but I've also learned, which is cool.
And yeah, as a hack and slash game, or a Diablo-like, or whatever, I think Babylon's Fall is really good. I would basically describe it most efficiently as a Diablo-type game that controls like a Platinum Games or a Capcom beat-em-up, like Devil May Cry or something.
Mm.
Like, you can still do combos and dodging and whatnot, but like your character build, the skills that you pick, the items that you pick, like it all changes your playstyle, how you're gonna play in an actual stage, like what you'll be able to do, how you're gonna deal with different enemies, stuff like that. Like, you could go for a DPS archetype or a rogue archetype or a tank archetype and just stand there taunting enemies, soaking up the damage. Maybe there's a healer who heals you, maybe you heal yourself. Yeah, maybe you're a DPS and you can't take much damage, so you rely on someone else to take the threat off you, and then you do your thing. So there's like a lot of possibilities to make your build kind of like MMO, I guess.
Cool. Sorry, I like that there's a variety, like, of playstyle.
Yeah, and at the same time, like, if you just look at the weapon types that you can pick and the skill types you can equip, you can just alter the way you play, the way you control your character. So recently I created a new character because I wanted a tank character for like when I'm playing with someone else who's just who just wants DPS or whatever. And I created a character that so in the game you can equip four weapons. Two weapons your character uses with your hands, and two weapons are spectral weapons that you can use independently. So I created a character who had a shield and a sword in their hands and two spectral axes. So I use the shield. Shield has a taunt ability, so I would use that to get the focus on me, and I could keep blocking attacks from the enemies while using my spectral axes to attack, for example. And I found it so satisfying to use the axes, like, because when you use spectral axes, it's like it would be spectral axe on your right trigger, spectral axe on your left trigger. So right trigger, you swing from the right. Left trigger, you swing from the left. So you could basically stand there, keep blocking, and just swing one after the other, left, right. Or if you're not just tanking and you just want to attack us one or two enemies, string in combos, you can attack with your sword and also use your axes at the same time to stun enemies, open them up for different attacks, launch them into the air, attack them with your sword and your axes. Then you can charge up your axe attack and do a tornado slash around you and clear a whole room if you timed your charge well enough. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that you can do, and I mean, that's just the stuff about building your character. There's, like, I enjoyed some enemy designs, some boss designs, level designs, especially in the campaign. Like, yeah. I think early, most people played early levels from the demo and from the beta, and they were, to be honest, they are pretty bland. They are pretty simple. They introduce new mechanics and new enemy types slowly. But, like, in the third zone and the fourth zone, there are some of my favorite levels. Like, in the frozen area, there's a level where you move around basically on floating rocks, and there are parts where a rock is swinging and you need to jump on it at the while the flat piece of the rock is facing up, so you can walk over it and go to another rock. There's a level with platforms that only appear when you're near them. So if you try to go blindly to another end of a platform, then you'll fall off the edge probably, because you didn't expect there's a turn here. And yeah, there's also enemies scattered throughout those sections sometimes, so you need to deal with them. And you have your big arenas in between those platforming sections where you need to fight several waves of enemies. I don't know. I went on a tangent here, I think.
That was the point, to go on a
yeah,
tangent.
The entire point was that you would tell us how you like the game and why you like it, and that's why I wanted to post that question.
You did a good job.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the game.
I have to revisit it because I only got to play the first couple of levels. So I really should probably give it a try and see how what I like it and how I like later level games. So thank you for telling me about that.
I mean, there's a free demo now on Steam and PlayStation. But again, this demo, it gives you access to you can complete the first zone, I think, which ends in a boss battle that wasn't in the beta. But most of it is just the beta. And although I think they fixed most of the problems that you listed in your preview. I think they dealt with most of those after that specific test. So it's gonna be a bit different, but yeah, it's a bit hard to judge the whole game from that demo.
Yeah, understandable. That's what happens with really big games. It's like, when do you make a demo, and when it's so large, but you don't want to show too much either?
Yeah, that's the hard part. You got to decide what you want to show. And I understand, like, the want to do a demo that is, like, the first levels of the game and stuff like that. Because then people could just, like, go, like, people who want to know can literally just buy the game after that. But I also feel like that is the worst way to showcase how good a game can be, which I feel like is part of what a demo should be.
I agree completely. Sometimes the first couple of levels can be really hollow in comparison to the later ones, so they don't really show the whole potential.
Exactly. Like, you're still getting your footing in those first, like, couple, like, levels and stuff like that. So, I don't know, like, I feel like, that sucks so much, but I also do understand why demos, you know, why they did that for their demo.
Oh, I mean, at least there is a demo. Like, making demos isn't as
common.
Yeah, as common as it used to be. Like, nowadays you would just watch gameplay, which is probably the best way to judge if you're gonna like the game or not.
That's why we try to post gameplay regularly to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/gamegrin.
Yeah, I'm actually
love
working.
A good place to like plug in there.
I'm actually working on some videos for Babylon's Fall, so I'm gonna try to get those finished. Maybe that will be useful for people who are interested in, I don't know. The worst thing is that if you look for Babylon's Fall on YouTube, you'll get the first videos that come up is like the worst fucking reactions you can get about the game. Like, that's really frustrating. Like, I don't do that anymore because it's not useful to me. Like, I can't get new perspectives. It's just all the same thing over and over.
I understand that. Like, when you like a controversial game, if you even try to look up stuff like that, because, like, I watch video essays whenever I'm bored, because the pursuit of knowledge. But, like, if you like a topic that is controversial, it is always the negative things that come up first, and they're always, like, the worst things you want to hear. And it's because those videos get more attention, unfortunately. But it's also like, I don't want to see that shit.
Yeah, exactly. Like, reviewing this game was the worst fucking experience, because I unfortunately wasn't able to avoid seeing those reactions, and I was like, am I wrong? Am I, like, insane for enjoying this? Like, should I find more negatives to put in here? Like, it was so frustrating, like, fighting with myself. What do I do? What do I do?
I understand that. That's one of the struggles of writing reviews, is, like, where am I being kind and stuff like that?
Yeah, because it's so, like, it's such a personal thing, to be honest. That's why I feel like reviews are such a hard thing. Like, I've written them before, too, but, like, I mean, as someone who, like, I guess writes them as well, like, reading them is almost hard sometimes, because like, this doesn't always match up with what I think a lot of the times in the first place, and it's a biased thing in the first place. Like, a review will always be biased in some way, shape, or form, so it's really fucking hard to, necessarily, when you see a bunch of bad reviews, you gotta wonder, am I weird? Is this just on me? But you also gotta be, like, now face the thing, is it my personal taste that this game is good and I'm wrong? Which I don't think you are. I think, once again, reviews are personal, but that's what makes them hard.
Yeah, it's the truth. It's like, it's your review, but at the same time, the big question is, where should you say this might be irritating to some people, but it wasn't to me? Like, I get that a lot with bugs, for instance. I'm so lenient with bugs. If a game's bug-riddled, I'm like, okay, but making games is hard. Stop complaining so much.
See, but that's, like, I'm so not lenient. It's so funny, because, like, I try to be lenient on things I straight up don't like from my personal standpoint. Like, I'm like, this was stupid, But then I'm like, not everybody might think that. I maybe need to lighten up. But when it comes to bugs, I know that's wrong, so I actually double down. I'm like, that's wrong.
Yeah, I understand.
For me, it's especially if I've seen some bug so many times. Over years, and like, why are we still doing this? Why are you still getting this wrong? Just get it right already. I want to show me a new bug. Show me a new problem.
10 out of 10, this game had unique innovative bugs.
Sorry.
No, continue. I had a thing about unique and innovative bugs, but I'm like, that's going to lead into a rant. So continue, of course.
I was going to say, show me a bug that no one's been doing for 20 years and you did it. Show me that, please, but don't show me this.
Oh my gosh.
And on that note, I think we've reached the end of our podcast. Thank you for joining me, Artura, Gauze, and Prince.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you
for listening to us.
Thank you for listening to the Greencast, and better yet, thank you for subscribing wherever you found this episode. You can find more from us on GameGrin.com, find us on social media, or listen to the Pals Anime Lounge podcast. Until next time, game on.